coming up on the Plant-Based DFW Podcast Show.
I had no structure. So it was like, I would try things. If they worked for a while, that would be great. And like a lot of people, if it worked for a while, I figured, oh, I don't need to do anything else. I'm good to go. I'm done. I can go back to the way things were. And, you know, it took a while to realize that, no, you need to change your lifestyle. You have to change, and it has to become a lifestyle. You have to actively live this way the rest of your life. And if you enjoy food as much as I do, you have to learn how to cook it, and you have to learn how to cook well. So,
welcome to the Plant-Based DFW Podcast Weekly Show with Dr. Riz and Maya, a show broadcasted from the Dallas-Fort Worth area that focuses on lifestyle medicine. This is the use of evidence-based lifestyle therapeutic approaches, such as a whole food plant-based diet, regular physical exercise, adequate sleep, and stress management to treat, prevent, and oftentimes reverse lifestyle-related chronic diseases that are all too prevalent. Every week, they feature a guest who speaks on one of these lifestyle medicine pillars. This show is for you, the person who is seeking to improve your overall wellness and quality of life. So whether you are driving, walking, or relaxing at home, we hope this show will provide you one more tool for your wellness toolbox. Let's meet today's podcast guest.
Before we meet today's guest, I have a voicemail from a previous guest, Dr. Ann. Do you remember listening to that episode? She's a dentist, and she came on to speak to us about how foods can affect dental health. So let's have a listen.
Hi, Maya and Dr. Riz. This is Dr. Ann. Just checking in to let you guys know how fun it was to be on your podcast. It's always such a wonderful time to connect with like-minded people to talk about overall wellness. And for those who are listening, if you would like to know how diet can affect overall oral health, please make sure to check out episode 80. We talk about a lot of topics regarding this arena. So I hope you are all doing well and have a great day, everyone. Bye.
Well, we always love to hear from listeners and from previous guests as well. You want to give us feedback? You want to share anything with us? Simply visit podinbox.com/plantbaseddfw and share with us what you think about today's episode. A couple of other announcements before we get started. In this episode, you will hear us talk about diabetes. And as a matter of fact, starting tomorrow, Tuesday, September 7th, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine will be running another 8-week course. This one is titled Fight Diabetes with Food. Please sign up and share the link with anyone who you feel may benefit from this. The website is pcrm.org/diabetes class. As a matter of fact, my guest, Dennis Jones, is one of the individuals that will be involved in this course, and we'll kick it off tomorrow on Tuesday. Dr. Riz and I will also be involved next week. So make sure that you visit the website and register. Also, have you chimed in to share how you have benefited from a plant-based diet? My friend Peter created a digital scoreboard with one question, only one question that you need to answer, and that is to go to this website, wedidit.health/survey, and simply check the boxes to show how you have improved your health. And if you want, you can even leave your testimony and share your story. Let's show the world that a plant-based diet can truly reverse disease. After leaving the U.S. Marines, Dennis's health began to decline. His weight jumped to nearly 350 pounds. He developed high blood pressure and became diabetic. Despite becoming vegetarian and losing weight for about a year, the lack of structure and guidance led him back to his old ways. A few years later, he nearly suffered a heart attack and was told that he needed a double stent or bypass surgery. Neither option was ideal, and Dennis faced taking medications and making a significant lifestyle change. One day, while looking for a healthy plant-based restaurant, Dennis discovered Green Fair, an educational restaurant offering organic whole food plant-based meals. There, he saw a flyer for the Barnard Medical Center and the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and on the spot, he signed up for the 21-day challenge to improve his health outcomes. Having faced his own mortality, Dennis woke up to making drastic changes. He became a certified food and lifestyle coach and has not looked back since. Today, he teaches, coaches, and speaks about food because of the deep desire to improve people's health and quality of life. This has been one of my favorite conversations with a diabetic health coach. I hope that you share this episode with as many people as you can. As always, show notes for this episode can be found on our website, plantbaseddfwpodcast.com. And this is episode 132. Welcome, Dennis.
Thanks for having me.
I was interested in speaking with you because I saw you speak in D.C. at the Barnard Medical Center, and the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine held like this intensive program in January of 2020. And that's like before life changed, right? So yes. I remember walking up to you and asking, will you come on the podcast? And then the pandemic happened and we lost touch. And then I just recently said, let's do this, you know. So there's so much to talk about when it comes to Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, because September 7th is the next round of courses that they will be offering titled Fight Diabetes with Food. It's an 8-week course, and you will be one of the first guests as part of the program.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for really knowing how to tell your story in terms of being very inspirational. And then let's talk diabetes. You just completed a training or a certification with the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, on preventing type 2 diabetes. So we can touch on that. We can touch on your participation with PCRM and all that other good stuff. But before we go there, I would love to hear more about your life. You know, I've heard you say you're from the South, but I don't know exactly where.
So I'm originally from, you know, my tagline for a long time was, I'm just a simple country boy from North Carolina. That's what I always tell people. I'm just a simple country boy from North Carolina. And so, you know, I'm kind of an Andy Griffith, all shucks kind of guy. Now, you may not look at me and think that, but, you know, that along with my my favorite music is bluegrass. I love bluegrass. Don't ask me how, don't ask me why, but I fell in love with bluegrass as a kid. I love being, I'm a country boy. I learned to drive on a International Harvester pickup truck with a 3-speed on the column, and the pedals came out of the floorboard, and I'm a tractor, but that's just my life. And then, you know, from there, I moved from the country to the city, or to town, as we called it. And I eventually decided that I wasn't mature enough to go to college, though I had offers. I got nominated for an appointment to the Naval Academy. I had scholarships. I had all kinds of things. But deep down inside, I knew two things. One, I wanted to get the heck out of the country.
Yes.
Because, you know, you grow up in it, you want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I blame my dad for all those National Geographic magazines. But I also wanted to grow up. I didn't think that I was mature enough to go to college, because I had friends who were like, you know, years ahead of me in high school. And a lot of them were on like their second and third of figuring out of what degree they wanted. And I was like, my parents don't have that kind of money. And I don't have that kind of money. So if, when I go to college, I need to know exactly why I'm there, because I don't have time to play around. So instead, instead of dealing with all of the things related to the service academy, which is a whole different story, that I kind of got coached about through two older cousins. One was at the Citadel taking a Marine Corps commission, and the other one was looking at an Air Force commission. And they talked to me about career, the military, and how that worked. And they said, if you're not sure and you just want to get the experience, just enlist and get it out of your system. So I did. I enlisted in the Marines, had a great time. Was it tough? Yeah, probably. But you know, when you're a guy, 17 years old out of high school, it's just one more thing to do, because it's all about bravado and swagger and that sort of thing. But that means you live life a little hard. You push things to the edge. But when you get out of the military, you tend to still live like you're still in the military, though your body is starting to catch up with you. And so, somewhere along the way, I moved to Hawaii, and I went from like 160 pounds to nearly 350 pounds. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was easy. So you have to understand, Hawaii is a great place to live. But when you are there and you live, like I lived on one of the outer islands, I lived on the Big Island. So your neighbors, if they are barbecuing or cooking, and everybody always seemed to be cooking or having a barbecue, they'd fix you a plate. And it was just customary that you would sit, have a plate, and talk story. Well, in Hawaii, the standard plate when I was there was you would have like a potato salad, macaroni and cheese, or macaroni salad, macaroni and cheese, rice, some type of animal protein, and pretty much that was it. And they would like give you two or three helpings of this kind of a plate, and you'd eat it, and you think nothing of it. And despite people seeing the beach and thinking that the beach is like, you know, that's what everybody does. No, when you live in Hawaii, pretty much you go to work. It's like living anyplace else. You get up, you go to work, you go home, and, you know, the weight comes on. And one day I had problems walking up three steps, not three flights of stairs, but three steps. And I went to my doctor, and he basically said, dude, you're pre-diabetic. I'm going to give you these meds. You need to be on this. You need to do this. And when they weighed me, I couldn't believe how much I weighed. And because the other thing about Hawaii is you're always wearing shorts and a t-shirt or an aloha shirt. And if your shirt gets a little tight, just get a bigger one. And when everybody looks the same, who cares? You're just one more big guy walking around, you know, in slippers or flip-flops and you know, hanging out. So anyway, the long and the short of it was I ate myself into bad health. Oh, and I will tell you one of the foods. If you've ever listened to Chuck Carroll, he'll tell you that his weakness was Taco Bell. When I lived in Hawaii, mine was Jack in the Box. I refer to it as crack in the box, okay? Because I could eat this thing called, when I first had an ultimate cheeseburger, I could barely eat like a quarter. By the time I left Hawaii, I could eat three in one sitting. And we're talking about almost 2 pounds of fat-laden stuff, you know, and I didn't think anything of it. So that's how bad it was.
I'm assuming then that you were pretty young, though. Were you like in your 20s? How old were you when you started?
Fresh out of the Marines, so I was probably about 21, 22. Because you have to understand, I joined the Marines at 17 because I graduated from high school at 17. So, so I was probably around 21, 22, you know, full of vim and vigor, as the old guys would say.
Such a young age to kind of head towards that path of being pre-diabetic. How were you diagnosed? How did you begin to have those symptoms that people have of fatigue and other things related to diabetes?
Oh, I had fatigue. I mean, literally, when I said I couldn't walk up three steps, I literally couldn't walk more than probably a few feet without having to sit down. I would get lightheaded. I would have like my blood pressure go up. I just would feel kind of uneasy and unsteady. My vision was getting a little blurry. It was like a cascading, there was cascading events is really is what it was. It was amazing how quickly one can destroy their health.
So it's such a young age to start to have sort of a decline in your health. So here you are, you were living with the symptoms, like you said, kind of a little bit of a blurred vision, feeling fatigue. Mm-hmm. How did you decide to have a health checkup and pursue trying to figure out what was going on with you?
Well, okay. So because I had some heart palpitations too, by the way. It was like literally, I mean, you talk about it. See, okay, so my weakness is I'm a food addict. And my addiction is food. And I love food of all kinds. Good food, just food. I love it. So I wasn't feeling well. And I said, you know what? Maybe I need to go and get a checkup. And so that's what I did. And I knew two things in life that I wanted to do. I always look for a DO. And I look for two things, a DO, and I looked instead of an MD, and I looked for someone who was into, like I had an herbalist. I mean, well, I didn't have one initially, but then I got an herbalist and then, you know, I got into some alternative treatments and things like that. But the reason I look for DO is when I started researching doctors, I wanted somebody who wanted to look at the whole picture and not just a single symptom. and treat the symptom. I wanted to figure out what was wrong and try to solve it. So the doctor I had was pretty young, and he said to me, he says, look, you're going to die. And if you ever hope to have kids or if you ever hope to live longer, you've got to make some changes. And he said, now I can give you medication and that will help you, but you can make a lifestyle change. You can change. He says, maybe try being vegetarian. That's what he said to me. He says, but I don't know much about it other than you can try it. Because my doctor was kind of a hefty guy. You know, he was Asian, kind of hefty guy, but he was a big boy. And so at the time, I knew some Seventh-day Adventists, and I knew that they were on Ellen White's writings kind of focused on being vegan or whole food plant-based. But I also knew that they had a church and they had a store. And I was like, well, let me go see what foods they sell that I could start incorporating into my meals. And so I started out slowly making adjustments. But again, I had no structure. So it was like I would try things. If they worked for a while, that would be great. And like a lot of people, if it worked for a while, I figured, oh, I don't need to do anything else. I'm good to go. I'm done. I can go back to the way things were. And, you know, it took a while to realize that, no, you need to change your lifestyle. You have to change, and it has to become a lifestyle. You have to actively live this way the rest of your life. And if you enjoy food as much as I do, you have to learn how to cook it, and you have to learn how to cook well. So that's kind of, and I'm giving you the what I call the Reader's Digest 10-cent version. But that's kind of how we were. That's what I was doing. There was some success, but a lot more failure than success, which is why as a coach, especially someone who focuses on diabetes and pre-diabetes, I understand the challenges and I understand what it's like, because I will tell you right now, there are days, even to this day, that I will have a not so good day. I don't think there's such thing as a bad day, but I have a not so good day. And that's the day that I'm traveling. Usually it's when I'm traveling or I'm doing something that I'll eat some potato chips, but I can't eat one. I can't eat a little bag. I eat potato chips. So I know what it's like to fall off the wagon. I know what it's like to have the wagon back up over you. And I know what it's like to get hit by the wagon when you're getting back up again.
Yes. But
I can empathize with people and I can help guide them through the pitfalls and how not to think that, oh my God, I failed. I can't do this. Oh, you can do it. Trust me. I'm down to 170 pounds now. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm off my diabetes medications. I still take some stuff for my heart because that's just, there was a lot of damage done there. I take something like 10 or 25 milligrams, very little, but mm-hmm. I take it and, I do my best to, stay on task. So
yes,
as a coach, I always tell people I'm living it. So I'm not some guy who's read a book and thinks that, oh, I can speak down to you and speak from on high and you're going to listen to me because I'm going to give you words of wisdom because I'm now Moses. No, no, my dear. I'm the guy the tablets landed on.
I appreciate that you say that, though. It's so important. I hope everyone catches that, because my mother, when I started to introduce her to this way of living, she once asked me if I ever cheat. And, you know, I didn't answer correctly because I thought she was asking me, have I ever gone back to consuming any animal products? And so I said, no, never. Why would I? So then I shared it with my husband and he said, you should have told her you do cheat. You eat chips.
Yep.
So it's like, oh, I should have told her that. Yes, mother, do I sometimes gravitate towards unhealthy processed vegan foods? Yes, I do.
Yes.
And I'm not proud of it. And you also pointed out when we're traveling, that is the most difficult time to eat the healthiest.
Yes. And here's the thing. I kind of reached a point where I'm like, okay, I know I'm traveling. So I try to pre-pack stuff for the road. Like I really do. Like my sugar of choice are dates. And I prefer, there's only two types of dates I like. One is called ajwa dates, which they're smaller. They're almost like little date gumdrops, so to speak. But I like them because contrary to what people would think, yes, they have sugar, but they have a lot of fiber. And because of the fiber and all the other nutrients, all it takes is one or two of them and you're done. But you've also gotten the fiber, so it keeps the sugar from hitting your system, so you don't get those massive spikes in your blood and everything when you're diabetic. And my other thing is chips. And I've learned how to bake chips. I've learned how to, I make my own popcorn. I do anything and everything I can so that when I stop for fuel, I can avoid the junk food habit that I developed when I used to drive across country. And I used to drive from Tulsa down to Houston, okay? And there's not a whole lot to do on the road between Tulsa and Houston except get gas and stop in a Valero, okay? Because that's the thing. That's how people can tell. I can tell you where I've lived. I can give you the gas stations or the places I would hit. I knew that if I stopped there, I could get everything I didn't need.
Right.
Plus the gas that I needed for my car.
Yes. So
it was kind of like, you know. But, you know, you develop that habit. And even though it's been years since I have changed the way I eat, I do know that my addiction to food is like an alcoholic's addiction to alcohol or mm-hmm. drug users. If I'm in that environment, mm-hmm. I have to have enough things in place to where I cannot go there. If I start craving like a candy bar or something like a dark chocolate or something like that, what I do is I break up my dates and then I will have a couple of almonds or I'll have some walnuts. And I found that if you eat the dates, the walnuts and the almonds all about the same time, it's almost like eating a candy bar without all of the poison.
Yep.
So, it's the little tricks, you know, what they call it now. Oh yeah, the younger people call it hacks. I just call it, it's the tricks I needed so I could survive without poisoning myself to get to the other side.
Yes. Know? Yes. No. I get it. There are so many things that I've learned because my husband's background is Pakistani. And so they do a lot of when you talk
about Pakistani. I saw his name. I'm like, well, is he Pakistani or could he be? Well, you know, there are some Desi Indians with the same last name because depending on where the family was from pre-47,
yes.
You get some that, you know, because my wife's family is from India, but her cousins are from Pakistan.
Well, okay? Look at that. Yes. So there's that story yes. behind with the family. So his mother yes. released a cookbook years ago, and it has a combination of like Punjabi recipes and Pakistani traditional. But we've been veganizing all those recipes, taking the meat and the dairy yes. out of everything because
well,
we know
like
that
it's certain recipes.
Sure,
you don't understand because up here I am part of my. I'll say what people don't understand is that my day job for many years has been health insurance, and a lot of my clients are what I refer to as Desi or Pakistani Indian businesses. And so I get invited to a lot of parties and I'm always having to make something to take, which is funny because all the wives will say, get him to make something, get him to bring something. Now the husbands are asking me, what are you bringing? You know, what are you bringing? And I'm like, okay, I'm bringing something, but you don't like my food, but yet my food is the first food to disappear. And I'm like, because I made a vegan raw pad Thai salad and I took this to a Desi barbecue. Okay. And they did tell me that they now will guarantee that there's going to be at least one vegan dish available, one vegan dish available for me to eat along with some rice. Okay. So I bring this salad and I promise you, as God is my witness, that salad, which came in two of those big, you know, the big aluminum things, gone. I mean, they ate it. I mean, one lady actually sent me a message saying, can you send me the recipe or can you make some for me? Because I really wanted, my daughter's gone vegan and I really wanted her to try it. But when I went back to get it, the salad was completely gone. And I was like, okay. So that's become my go-to. And I've got a Desi event. Matter of fact, Pakistani friend of mine's birthday is Saturday. So I will be making my pad Thai salad with an almond butter dressing. It has green onion or scallions. It has carrots. It has zucchini. It has cauliflower, and then I put in some sprouts, and I mix that together, and I sprinkle on a little bit of sesame seed occasionally, and then I put on some nutritional yeast, and then I put in mint, And then I have the salad on the side, the dressing on the side. And that's, oh, sorry. Cilantro has to go in there as well. My wife just said cilantro is in there.
Love cilantro.
Yes. So I threw the cilantro in there along with the mint and all of this together. And I serve it up. And people just love it. And,
yeah.
And I love it because I get the carnivores, not omnivores, but the carnivores will be the first to put some on their plate next to that hunk of flesh. But they will eat it, and then they will find that, man, they didn't go back for seconds on the flesh. So I'm like, if you just add a little bit more vegetables to your plate, a little bit more vegetables to your plate, may not have any of that flesh on your plate.
Yes.
But, you know, I tell my clients, I work with them where they are. My goal is to get them to eat more plants. The more plants you eat, the healthier you'll get, and eventually you'll crowd out other things.
Yes, yes. And as a matter of fact, when I saw that, my husband and I had rice and beans and legumes in general in common in our cultures, it was actually easier for us to go vegan or plant-based at that time. But the secret is in the spices, which I'm sure you talk about all the time. If you don't have spices, you just don't have flavor. So.
You need to send me your address. I have my brother-in-law, his grandmother hand grind spices from India. And they're from Hyderabad. So your husband will appreciate the Hyderabadi spices are really strong.
Okay.
And he brings me bags of this one chili spice, and I put this on everything. But if you don't like spice, it's going to be too much. However, I'll send you a sample. And I know you're going to love it. I know you're going to love it because I used to give it out at PCRM when I would go to some of the Monday night classes. I would actually take bottles and I would sprinkle it on my food. And then when they'd have out the samples and people started requesting a sample bottle. So I would go to Pinsy's and get empty bottles and like bag it for people.
See, wow.
Because I'm all about eating good food and, you know.
Yeah. So since you mentioned PCRM, I was hoping we could move along to terms of your story. You mentioned Green Fair in your bio, and I was fortunate enough to go to Green Fair. I think it was the previous year. ICNM was when I went to Green Fair, and they did like private screening of the movie and sampled the food. And I remember I've never wanted to own a restaurant, but I remember going to her restaurant, looking around, seeing it's a combination of a bookstore and healthy living, great food, and do movie screenings and lectures. And I thought, oh my God, this is like the ideal place. I got to come back to Dallas and tell some of my friends that sort of have a kitchen that they cook out of and things like that, because this is how we learn from one another. But tell us again about your experience of finding Green Fair, which eventually led you to the Physicians Committee.
Okay. So actually, my wife was going in for a checkup with a doctor at one of the ANOVA hospitals, and her mother was with us, and she was saying, "Well, what do we want to do for lunch?" Okay, so I said, "Okay, let me look something up." So I break out my Happy Cow app because you know that's me. I always lean on Happy Cow. And by the way, that's not a plate endorsement. That's just the reality of life. When you're plant-based, you need Happy Cow in your life.
That's
so
right.
I looked up Happy Cow and I saw Green Fair, and I'm like, well, and I knew the shopping center, but I was like, I don't know this restaurant. Who is it? What is it? How bad can it be? And my wife was like, well, you know, is it going to be any good? Because we, you know, outside of New York City and Philadelphia, which by the way, are two stories you should really hear about. I have gone to Philly for dinner at Veg. Without a reservation, just hoping to get in to be able to eat their food because it's whole food plant-based. So anyway, and that's a 2.5-hour drive from my house in Virginia. I went there just for a meal and turned around and came back from Philly. Okay. But anyway, so I looked up, I found Green Fair, and we drove over and we went in and I knew the shopping center, but I was looking around and I was like, so you have to understand, you have to picture this shopping center. At the time that Green Fair opened, there was a kebab restaurant right next door, a Thai restaurant next door, and a Indian grocery store and a halal grocery store. Don't ask. I mean, they were there. So they were right next to each other. And then we had a Loti, which is kind of a large Asian chain. And so basically it's a very, Oh, and there's a Russian store. So really, it was an ethnic supermarket, strip mall, basically, a lot of ethnic-owned little stores. So I go in there, and I don't have much of an expectation because I'm not in a major city. So plant-based cooking probably will be hit or miss, and I was thinking more miss than hit. Went in, met Gwen, met Pericles, virtually the whole crew, and ended up ordering four full meals. And we ate, and I was reading the material, and I was reading about Dr. Barnard. And my wife said to me, she says, well, I know who he is. She says, when I was doing my research up in Columbia, I knew what he was doing and this sort of thing. So it's good to see that this is what happened to him. So then I saw that they had the medical practice. And I was like, well, you know, I need a new doctor, and I want somebody who's not just going to try to treat my symptoms. So I called them up, set up an appointment, and went in and got to meet Dr. Loomis. And if you've seen the movie Game Changers, Dr. Loomis, who is in the movie wearing the Super Bowl ring and the World Series ring, he's my doctor at Barnard Clinic. Then I was reading Gwen's thing about her upcoming 21-day jumpstart and kickstart. And I said, you know, we talked about it, my wife and I said, well, let's try it. I mean, what harm can it do? Plus, for 21 days, we'd have all these meals. So we did the meals, we did the weigh-in, we did the blood work, I did everything. And so we went to the classes, but anyway, the meal that I had was really, really good. And it was so good that for literally 3 months, I ate the same meal from Green Fair. It was the Thai quinoa salad. That's what it was. It was the Thai quinoa salad because it was the only thing that had spice. See, because I like spicy food. So it was the only thing that was really spicy. But I had that for literally 3 months. Every time I go there to get something, I ordered one meal. I didn't matter. Everything else was good. I had one meal. And I met them. They said, come to the class. I went to the class, got to know them. And then Gwen and them were kind enough to let me volunteer in their kitchen for about a month to learn how to cook whole food plant-based cooking tied to what we learned in the 21-day Kickstart. So I got hands-on in a kitchen, in a, you know, setting. So I got back into my cooking because years earlier when I was younger, I worked as a line cook. So I actually thought about going to culinary school. So yeah.
So that is so impressive. So here you are cooking. You're not trained yet. Like you're not specializing in diabetes or anything like what you're doing. You just, it became a passion of yours. Plus you already enjoyed cooking.
Right.
So what a wonderful collaboration and connection you had there.
Yes. Oh, it was great. And Gwen and Pericles to this day, I see them. I live a little bit further away. I'm about 30 minutes or so away from them now, but I go in at least two or three times a month to get something to eat. It's also the only place I know I can get vegan desserts that don't have white sugars and all this other stuff in there. So yeah. I'll go in and I like to support what she's doing and, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah. I go in there. And by the way, you were there because Dr. Montgomery was there the same day that she had the gun. Yes, you were sitting. I remember now where you were sitting because I was sitting on the other side. So I was there for the same thing. So I saw Game Changers there, but then I got tickets to see it in the movie theater when it came out, which was even better because there's the post movie part that you don't see in the movie theater or on your DVD or anything else. You don't see it, but there was a where James Cameron did a talk afterwards. And I wish that they would attach that to the rest of the Game Changers movie. But it was awe inspiring. And as a Marine, as soon as I heard the chanting, I didn't even have to have my eyes open. I heard the chanting as they were running at Camp Pendleton, though I was never stationed there, but I know Pendleton because I've been there. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's talking about Marines and he's talking plant-based. And I'm like, how can this be? Because I usually don't talk around my Marine buddies about being plant-based because, you know, that's at that time, it was not a thing a knuckle dragger talked about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps as you're speaking. And that's sort of the impact you had on me early 2020 when I heard you speak, is that when you're speaking this way, when you're talking about this, I feel like people can connect with your message and what you're saying. And that's exactly, it makes it, you're so like personable that way or relatable. And I love that. But yeah.
Like I said, I'm just a simple country boy from North Carolina. What can I say?
You address, and I don't want to skip around, but you address the movie, and people who have not seen The Game Changers, you can just look up The Game Changers, the movie, I think on, Google it, or it might still be on Netflix. I don't remember, but it addresses individuals who, not only does it show that there's evidence behind eating plant-based and being, and having, more endurance, but it also speaks to individuals who kind of feel the need to pursue this, this obsession with meat being the only protein that exists. I've also heard you talk about, referring to yourself as an alpha, and that says a lot, because and you say alpha, and on my end, I say machistas or machos,
When I was in the Marines, you'll appreciate this. When I was in the Marines, most of my roommates or buddies were either Hispanic, Puerto Rican, Dominican, Cuban, and because at the time I actually had hair and with green eyes, I would hang out with these guys and I would pick up Spanish, not necessarily the nicest of Spanish, but I would pick up Spanish and I'd hang out with these guys. And I learned the two-step when I was in the Marines, and I learned to do the Mexican hat dance, and I learned to do salsa merengue. But so we always refer to ourselves as knuckle draggers because, we're guys, right? We're this alpha male. I mean, you don't join. And when I say that, I don't mean it discriminatory against females, because I'm telling you, I've not met a woman who was a Marine who was not also an alpha. I mean, you don't join the Marines if you're timid. It's not, that's what you got the Air Force for. I mean.
Oh, my God. You didn't just say that.
Oh, yes. Well, my dad was Air Force. So I say this all the, I would always say, that's what you got the Air Force for. You need somebody timid. Yeah, go to the Air Force. But if you're a knuckle dragger, you're going to probably be in the Marines, or you'll join the Army, be in the Rangers, be a special operator, or you'll be a Navy SEAL, or you'll be somebody who's out there more aggressive. It's an aggressive personality. And so when I saw that in Game Changers, I was like, it got my attention. It really did, because I always believe that it's not about what you eat. It's about who you are, and you bring your game to the table. And when I saw these guys like Nemo Delgado, and I saw this guy who was mixed martial arts champion, and all of these people were plant-based, and they were freaking, these guys were beasts. And then you have Dotsie. I mean, you got her, she's on this bike. I mean, like, I cycle and I look at what she's burning and I'm like, my God, she's got power. That just tells you it's not about the animals.
Yep. Yeah.
It's about nutrients.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was speaking with you earlier about my dog sitter, and there's a couple that just started looking after my dog. And I think she says she's going to be 53 years old.
Okay.
And she just cycled 73 miles last week.
Okay.
And she's about to run a 50 mile run. And I don't know if it's a race. And she's like, that's in celebration of my birthday. And she leans more towards being plant forward than anything else. And I'm thinking, because we didn't talk about diet when we initially met. So the endurance and the ability to really last and recover fast, and all the other, and then of course you got the male stamina that the movie addresses. But I do agree with you in terms of, I'm so glad that when we were talking, I said, I hope that we can address a little bit of your background as a Marine, because it does take a certain type of personality to, I think you have to know how to endure a lot to be a Marine. My mother had a couple of brothers in their younger years that were also Marines, and talk about strong personalities.
Well, I'm going to tell you, okay, I think mine was, it was, this is a result of going to Catholic school. So I went to a Benedictine school. However, the nuns were Franciscan and the priest was Jesuit. And the priest that we had when I was there, he had just served 3 combat tours as a U.S. Marine before he decided to become a priest. So the guy was a little on the militant side. And he was a little on the militant. And I will tell you, I always tell people that there was one incident where I kind of, okay, so see, when I was in school, nuns still wore habits, and we had some of the nuns had their habits with the wings. So, you know, they look like King. Obviously, the only Catholic school girl would know this. So anyway, she had the wings, and her name was Sister Dennis. And Sister Dennis, she walked past us one day. We were in line going to the cafeteria, and Sister Dennis was about as tall as she was round. So she was not a really tall person, right? And she wore a black and white habit. So you know where I'm going with this. So she walked by, and I went, whack, 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 like a penguin.
Oh, you're terrible.
And I did it. And all my buddies started laughing. And then I did it again, and nobody laughed. And I couldn't figure out why. It was because Father was right behind me, and I caught the back of his hand. And he was like, "You're done, young man." And he drags me out of line, takes me back to the discipline room, right, where they break out the paddle. Yeah. And the paddle had holes in it, so it really clung to you. So you first of all, they read you. Like, it was like an executioner. They told you what you did wrong, and they told you what your sentence or punishment was going to be. And then you had to sign, and you had to take this note home to your parents to let them know you just gotten paddled. And then when I did that, I would get home, and my mother would call up my grandfather who lived down the street from me, and she would say, "He got into trouble and he got paddled," and he'd say, "Send him to me." And my grandfather had this razor strap, and he would then proceed to punish me some more, because he was like, he said, "Because the only thing you come into this world with is your name, and what you do with it is up to you." And so he was always big on, you don't disrespect teachers, you don't make fun of religious leaders, people, nuns, I guess nuns counted, and you definitely don't talk back to the priest. And so I got punished. But for me, it was a regular occasion. I actually lived on the fact that I was like 4'5", 4'6". So for me, it was always that machismo. I'm tough enough to take whatever discipline you throw out. I can take it. So I think somewhere along the way, joining the Marines was just kind of like, you know, they can't be that tough. And so, I laugh and joke and say, you know, it's a generational thing, but I was used to just, you have to have a certain amount of machismo. That's the best phrase. And, you know, I always like to think of myself as he used to do the Dos Equis commercial, the world's most.
Oh, yes. Yes. What, Don something.
Yeah. He was the world's. Yes.
Yes. It wasn't Don Julio, because Don Julio is the liquor.
Yeah, Don Julio is liquor, but it was the other guy. And the guy, he'd always be like the world's most, you know, and so he was like, he'd been on a mountaintop, he'd been everywhere, he'd done everything, because he was like the world's most sophisticated man.
I love it.
I kind of identified with that. But I think, again, if I talk to my buddies who are Marines, we all have that same outlook on life. And it's really weird that, yeah, we just do. But there is a lot of knuckle dragging and bravado that comes with the mythos of being a Marine. I mean, you know, it really does. And I think going plant-based and realizing I can be plant-based and still be that knuckle dragger. I'm just a little bit more refined. My mother was a feminist, so I always, there's another case. My mother was a feminist, so I always respected women. I would defend a woman. Chivalry was never dead in my book. I mean, you know, ask my wife. She had got upset when I tried to open the door for her one day. When I first met her, she was like, "What are you doing?" I said, "And this is where I'm from. I open the door and I walk on the side by the cars on the street. You're my job's to be there, because it's genetic. It's just inbred."
Right.
But you know.
But it's interesting. So you go from being, and you still consider yourself an alpha man, and the reason I say that is because not long ago I was watching a sort of an analysis of a show from the 90s that focused on women being feminists, and they used to kind of brag about not knowing how to cook, that they spend most of the time ordering out. That was the show. That was what they emphasized. It was like the sense of pride that I'm a woman who's independent. I have a business, or I'm independent and I'm successful, and I don't know how to cook. Yes. You know, that was like the message that they were sending to younger girls back then.
Right.
But then, you know, some of the top people and chefs tend to be men. And now we're living at a time when many of us are going back to the kitchen, period, mm-hmm. regardless of your age and your background and your culture. A lot of us, especially during this time, right, mm-hmm. since we're limited, there were so many limitations now going on 2 years mm-hmm. of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how you ended up kind of going into the Physicians Committee, because you knew about the Physicians Committee from going to Green Fair, the restaurant.
Yes, yes.
And the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine is Dr. Neil Barnard's organization in D.C. Mm-hmm. And we're proud members. We love to support anything that they do because Dr. Barnard is all about integrity.
Yes, yes.
And that means so much to me. So, and now you're also teaching people how to cook as a Food for Life instructor. So yes. how did all of that get started?
Well, so after Gwen's class, after the 21-day program, somewhere along the way, I think Gwen even mentioned to, or either Pericles, one of the two, one of them mentioned to me that, you know, they have this thing called being a Food for Life instructor, and I didn't know much about it. And then after I started going to see Dr. Loomis, and he would share with me some of his recipes, and we would talk about food. I mean, you know, this is the coolest thing in the world when you can go into your doctor's office, instead of them talking about what drug they're going to put you on, they talk about what meals you should try to prepare at home to help you improve your health. I mean, there's just something cool about that. And so then I ended up talking to Susan Levin. She's my nutritionist. And so along the way, she said, you know, we have this thing, you should apply for it. And I said, well, what's the odds of me getting and becoming a Food for Life instructor, because I didn't think that I would, for whatever reason, I didn't think I would qualify. So anyway, I applied and I got interviewed and I got accepted into the program. And then the rest was history. And it was like, I walked into a place where I was doing what I love. Now I've signed up for Roubaix. Roubaix. I'm doing Roubaix, their plant forward professional program for cooking, plant-based cooking. And I am actually weighing the idea that within a year or two, I may go to a full-on culinary program to really hone my my culinary skills, because I've always liked cooking. So my mother, the feminist that she was, always said to me when I was a kid, she said, what did she used to say? She said, boy, you need to learn how to cook, because with your looks, you know, you might starve to death if you look waiting to look, find a wife. So, you know, so I learned to cook as a kid. I learned to cook after a couple of fires in the kitchen. I finally figured out how to cook. And even though I'm from North Carolina and spices, you know, the spice was salt and pepper. I did a year when I was in college a year abroad at the American University in Cairo, and walked into a spice market. And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
Wow.
And I saw all these fresh spices and haggling and getting to sample. I mean, Maya, mm-hmm. there's nothing quite like fresh ground spices. Mm. And when you're standing there and people are showing you how to cook things with it, and you're getting to sample them and mix them, and, you know, it just became a thing. Now, I will tell you the secret to winning my wife over was I cooked for her. But I cook from scratch. And, you know, the first thing she said to me was that, my God, you know how to cook your spices. Because I cooked my spices instead of just adding them to a dish. I actually yes. heated them up before I put my dish together. So yeah. I love cooking. So what can I say?
Yeah, I definitely understand all of that. The roasting, some of the spices and heating them up and then grinding them yourself if you can. Mm-hmm. I love it. Oh my gosh. So I love the name of your website, Course Correction. And that's mm-hmm. separate. I mean, it's your individual work, but it's, you know, it's in addition to what you do for PCRM as a Food for Life instructor.
Yes.
Can you tell us about the name? And I love it. It's okay. really about helping people get on the right track, isn't it?
Right. Well, okay. So here's what happened. I was sitting in a Pete's coffee shop with my graphic arts person. We were trying to figure out a logo for my business card, because I just got my Food for Life certification and everything and completed my training. And I was like, well, I need to hang out my shingle, and what am I going to call myself? And so kicking around ideas, and I said, well, the whole purpose of this is to do what I had to do, which is course correct, right? You know, is to get back on the right course. So I kept throwing it around, and eventually, I forget who was it at the table, might have been my wife, might have been my graphic artist, whoever it was, we basically ended up settled on the phrase course correction, because I wanted to put people on the right course, kind of like with being on a ship. All I could think of was just all about direction. And we all need help with getting in the right direction. And so that became the motivation behind it. And I actually thought the name was only a placeholder, that eventually I would come up with something better. And I just can't seem to get away from course correction.
It sticks. It feels like you said, like getting on a ship. We're sailors, my husband and I. You learn all the terminology. And when I think of course correction, I'm thinking I'm on a ship and I'm taught mm-hmm. how to navigate it properly, because you're still yes. in the water. So you're never going to yes. go in a straight line, but you're learning how to navigate the situation that you're in. So
and you nailed it right there. It's all about starting where you are. And how do we get to where we're trying? How do we get to that next port? And that port is, to me, the next port is the end. But how do I get there in a healthy, safe manner? And I love sailing. I've never learned to properly sail, but I do love sailing. I think it's the coolest thing in the world to be at sea. I've been at sea, and just I don't know when you're. I remember.
Because you were on the water as a Marine. So
Right. But when I lived in Hawaii, I actually used to do a lot of cycling. And one day, I think it was either Chilean Navy or the Peruvian Navy, they have a tall ship, 3-mast. She's beautiful. I mean, she's beautiful. It's a training ship for their sailors. And she was coming into port in the town of Hilo. And she was leaving port, and she unfurled all of her sails. And it was just so majestic. I stopped cycling. I was riding along a highway pass. I had to just stop and be in awe of this beautiful vessel as it made its way out to sea. And it was just, there's nothing quite like it. Now, I was in the North Atlantic when I was in the Marines, and sailors are a special breed of people. And there was a storm that came up, and on the horizon, you could see a sailboat. And I'd say she was probably about 100 feet, 200 feet long, which is a big sailboat.
It is.
But
yeah.
I saw her. I mean, I saw them, doing everything they could to try to outrun a storm, because you don't want to get caught in a storm. And which is what I equate when you are diagnosed with like diabetes, heart disease, and high blood pressure, the big three, that's the storm, that's the trifecta. And when you're hit with that, how do you navigate through that? How do you course correct without getting yourself turned upside down or breaking a jib or having the mast snap? And, what do you do? How do you gain control?
Yeah.
And life is a lot like sailing, because it is. The winds are blowing. When you're with family, that wind is blowing in a direction. It pulls on historic and cultural foods that are made a certain way that you realize they're not the healthiest, and I can't eat that way. And how do I navigate between what I grew up with or know culturally to what I know I need to be doing now because I understand health better? And I tell people, culturally, those meals are great because most of us come from agrarian societies. We're eating the kinds of foods and the kinds of fats and the things that we did. You needed it because you would eat maybe one meal a day, sometimes maybe two, but most of it's going to be burnt doing something heavy, hard work, or just working. Mm-hmm. And you leave that agrarian, I don't even just want to say agrarian, but it's also the craft skills that there's a whole segment of society that a lot of us have moved beyond, and our bodies have not adapted. And mm-hmm. the foods have changed, and the foods have been changed so that they can make us want to eat them more, but there's nothing healthy about them. So again, we have to make that correction. We have to figure out a way how to navigate the seas, so to speak, and have a good quality of life. I mean, because that's what it's all about. It's about, and I tell people, I'm not trying to live the perfect life. I just want to have a good quality of life, because I don't want to be the guy who's 70 years old and needing, a walker with four legs on each corner and taking, like I have clients, because I deal with Medicare, and I would see clients with literally a legal pad filled with medications because they would just because they would rather take a medication than try to correct the things that could be on an underlying side. Plus, they would shop doctors and end up half the time meds were to offset the side effects of other meds because the doctors didn't know all the meds they were taking. So for me, I see this as an essential part of really having good healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm driven by it. I'm passionate about it. You know, good healthcare. There's a chiropractor here, and I'm going to borrow a phrase from him. And he goes, "Health is a do-it-yourself proposition." Oh. He always says that, you know. And that's my thing. I truly believe this, and I believe in what I do. I'm trying to put together a cohort now of patients that are pre-diabetic, and the CDC has some rules with that, and people have to qualify. And so I'm trying to right now put together a cohort of 14 people so that we can start a program of monitoring and getting them to go from being pre-diabetic to not being diabetic over the course of the next year. That's my big project. And then my other project is I'm just constantly working with and looking for clients who are really diabetic and all other things have failed. Those are the clients I really want. I want to work with people who were like me, nearly blind, about to die from heart disease and all sorts of things. I want to work with those people because I know what it's like to not have been successful in everything else. And I know what it takes and what it requires to be a part of to be successful in making that turnaround.
Mm, yes. And I assume that the people that you attract then, the clients that you attract, sort of have an understanding about the role that food plays in, you know, the onset of, you know, insulin resistance, but also just diabetes.
So I guess I should explain how I get my clients.
Yes.
I don't market myself. I work with physicians, nurses, other healthcare providers. I try to work with people who, because when people talk to me, when I'm introduced to people, I know sort of where they're coming from. Now, I don't know the details because of HIPAA restrictions, but generally speaking, when a person gets referred to me, their doctor has referred, and so there's less resistance for people to talk to me, but they're still not quite sure as how food really does have an impact. They know that food has some impact, but they're not quite sure how food has an impact because they think that if they just eat less McDonald's and drink one less Big Gulp, that somehow that's all they need to do and things are going to get better. And so I literally have to take them from the ground up of understanding the impact of what they're eating, how they're cooking, how they're preparing, what's in their pantry. We do everything from a pantry clean out to learning how to read labels to when possible. And depending on where the client is located, I will actually come into town because I have clients all over the country and I will, you know, schedule a trip. And when I'm there, basically we'll go shopping together and we'll cook meals together so that they can see how easy it is to be whole food plant-based.
Well, that's exactly what I feel most people need when they're ready to make that change, is that they really do want someone to hold their hand. Yes. I mean, I've done that with family members when I have time because I don't live around my family. I do travel, but I've spent a week just every day cooking, teaching them how to use the Instant Pot, showing them around in the grocery store. But that's sort of, it's because what happens is you have to look at life with new eyes and new options, because most of us gravitated at one point or another towards the fast foods because of the lifestyle that we've been living. So frozen foods are easier. Fast food restaurants are easier than anything else. And most people, like even my husband, when he's speaking with his patients, he'll ask them, if you had someone cooking for you, would you eat this way? And they say yes. But it's all about, like, how do I get started when I've never been in the kitchen, when I've never taken the time to even, I don't know, you know, cook some beans, for example.
Well, then you'll appreciate this. Sorry for interrupting, but when I teach live classes, which I do, if I have access to a restaurant, like in DC, there's a restaurateur that has me come in on Sunday afternoons and I teach the classes, but we do more, we went one step further. Because she's trying to reach a sort of underserved population, she brings in single burners and everybody gets a pan and they get a cutting board and they get knives. And literally, I show people how to cut vegetables without cutting themselves. I show them how to cook without oil. And then what we do is we make, each station makes two meals or four meals. And one meal is to be eaten with everyone who's in the class after the class is over. And then the rest of the meals are taken home so that they can have meals for the start of the week.
Well, that's perfect. I love that. That's exactly what people enjoy is eating together. I've heard you say that, and I get it, making that change, sort of there's this sense of loss that people feel that they're losing something, they're losing their culture. I find myself often hearing that from individuals who are not on board in terms of going plant-based, is they start to kind of want to hold on to their culture. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, I don't want to lose that part of myself. That is how I define myself, like certain meals and where I come from in my country. So, I mean, I completely understand that. And yet, you and I know that we can replicate the flavors and even the textures with the right foods.
Right. And the key is learning. And again, this is one of the things that I do. I'm currently trying to negotiate with a spice shop up in New York City that I love to shop in when I'm in the city, to put together little packets so that when people complete one of my classes, all the spices that we use, they will get a sample of all of those spices so that they can, because I will tell you, there are people who live in major cities and do not know how to go into a supermarket and buy spices. They don't know how, and which I don't like to do because supermarket spices are usually old. So I'm like, you need to go into a spice shop. You need to go into an ethnic market. You need to go where there's such a high turnover that the spices and the flavorings are always fresh.
I love it. I mean, I have these memories. First of all, I love that you collaborate and help cross promote the resources that are in your community. It makes it so practical and doable. So now you mentioned your classes that are coming up as well. Are you virtual? Is everything for you virtual right now?
No, I'm a mix. I'm a hybrid. Because I live in the what they call the quad jurisdictional area, I am, just so for reference point, I am 37 minutes to West Virginia. I am 25 minutes to Maryland. I am 45 minutes to DC. Okay, almost an hour to DC.
Nice.
And so because there's different jurisdictions, some places I can do stuff in person, and other places if enough people have reached out to me, I also sort of monitor a diabetes group from Barnard that basically is for people who went through their diabetes training. Once a month, we have a session where people can kind of come together and talk about things that work for them and that don't work for them. So I sort of monitor that for them. So if I have enough clients that want to do a virtual class, then I do a virtual class. Now, I've had students in one of my virtual classes as far away as Italy. Because of the ViewStub platform that I use, people can sign up from anywhere and actually attend a virtual class. The classes I love most, believe it or not, are the classes where I do a fly-in. Like, for instance, I have a restaurant in North Carolina. Well, I know someone in North Carolina who has a friend who owns a restaurant in North Carolina who wants to do a health promotion Saturday. So I'm trying to schedule to be in North Carolina. I'm going to visit some family, but I'm also going to go in and do a workshop, teach a one-session Food for Life class, and try to do some hands-on, answer questions. And, you know, if people want to then pick up a health coach or a diabetes coach along the way, I'll do that as well. And so I'm pretty much a hands-on. I don't want to be limited. I want to reach people no matter where they are. I don't care. I have a lady in the UK, that I've been working with, and she does not speak English. She speaks Bengali. and I don't speak Bengali. Okay, so, you know, I don't really speak Urdu either, but at least I understand it because my mother-in-law, my father-in-law speaks it. So I can understand Urdu. You know, I can also understand Gujarati, but, you know, but yeah, I, you know, I barely speak English. I'm a country boy from North Carolina. We talk like this, y'all. You know, we're over yonder now, you know. Howdy, folks.
So that's great. So I like that. So you say you don't want to be limited. So you're very open. And the reason I ask about your virtual then, even though you are hybrid, is because if we do have listeners that are interested, maybe they're pre-diabetic, because you have a lot of things going on. You have something work with the CDC that you're trying to put together, the cohort with pre-diabetic individuals, a small cohort. Then you have your tri-area there that you can service in person or hybrid. And then we have listeners everywhere. So if people are suffering from diabetes and want to take control of their health, they can work with you. You have a lot of titles, but would you say you're basically a diabetes lifestyle coach?
Yeah, for the most part. Which, you know, is kind of ironic because what works for a diabetic works for a heart disease patient, it's like I you know, when you're in the industry, it's like, yeah, I focus on diabetes because I know that that's a population that there's a lot of stigma attached to being told that you're pre-diabetic or diabetic. And because there's a lot of stigma that society has placed on it, and people feel like, oh my God, I'm diabetic. My grandparents are diabetic. I'm going to die by the age of 35 or 40 or 50. And I'm like, no, you don't have to, because we can reverse it to some degree, if not completely, if you're willing to put in the time and the work to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And, my primary focus are people who are dealing with some level of diabetes. But if somebody needs a health coach, I'll talk to them. I believe I've drunk the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. I have drunk the Kool-Aid and it was not made from Kool-Aid, but I, you know, and I truly believe that, all I can do, I'm on this earth to do something to help people. And I think for me, this is my way of giving back, because I promise you, Maya, 4 years ago, I was almost blind. My ophthalmologist told me that he was hoping to save my eyes, but he knew that I would be wearing like really thick glasses and might even have to give up my driver's license. Every time I go to see him, he's like so amazed that my eyes are so good and my vision is so much better. And he's like, I don't know what you did. And I said, it's all about plants, my friend. It's all about plants.
It is. And it's about plants and also the support that you offer, like building a support system that people need. Because as you and I know, a lot of us that are already on board have very few people around us in terms of family that are on board, right? Like a lot of us are alone. But we build a community by connecting this way with each other. But a lot of us already know what it's like when our families and friends are questioning the way that we eat. They think we'll be malnourished, as if eating McDonald's is not contributing to being malnourished every day. But let me ask you just one question. What can lead to the onset of diabetes? Do you want to just tell us a little bit about what's the main culprit?
To my understanding, okay, the main culprit to diabetes is the receptors being blocked by too much fat. And that fat comes from heavily processed foods that the body, I don't want to go medical because then I might lose people, including myself. Basically, the receptors for the insulin from the bloodstream into the muscles is blocked by too much excess fats and oils and things that are not allowing the insulin to be absorbed so that the body can use it as fuel. And all that it does is it forces that the excess sugars that are in the body to keep circulating and circulating and circulating to the point that it comes out in your urine, it comes out in your blood. And at the same time, your body stops getting the nutrients that it needs because insulin is something that is vital to your body to be healthy. And that's the simplest way that I can describe it. It's a lot of the fats. That's why I try to teach people how to cook without oil and how to not do these highly refined foodstuffs. And one of the reasons I say stay away from dairy, because dairy is just filled with hormones and fat for a cow, for a baby calf to become a big cow. So again, things that we don't need that basically, and of course that includes cheese, just impacts the body's ability to absorb its own nutrients and its insulin. So it can't function and the muscles can't function. And that ends up in your waist. And when it ends up in your waist, that's when they detect, as they say, sugars in your blood or in your urine. So, because it has to get excreted somewhere.
So after your clients, once your clients actually began to see improvements, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe they need to come off a little bit off their medications or have the medications adjusted. How mm-hmm. supportive are their doctors when they hear that the reason that they're seeing improvements is really diet related?
It's been a mixed bag. Some doctors will say, I'll use myself as an example. I had a cardiologist, which is why I fired him, who said that when he saw that my numbers had gotten better because I'd gone plant-based, was he says, well, I knew that it worked, but I just thought it would be too hard and you wouldn't be interested in doing it, or you wouldn't be able to do it. That, I mean, and to have a doctor tell you that the reason I don't recommend a therapy for you is because I don't think you're capable of doing it, that's disheartening. But there are clients who've told me their doctors have said they just couldn't believe it worked. Maybe you're doing, I mean, I've had some people say their doctors have said, maybe you're doing something else and you're just not telling me, and it's just, you really get a mixed bag because there's so many doctors who don't understand the value of nutrition on reversing diabetes.
I know. And it makes me angry in many ways. You know, there's a lot of information, all this information that many physicians are not aware of, or right now with the keto diet and other sorts of mm-hmm. diets, they just prescribe whatever they see on television, it seems like. Oh, go eat this way, you know, because they don't know. Well, and I never like to speak bad about physicians, so please don't take it that way. I want to respect people because I believe that in general, people are doing the best that they can with the information that they have. So,
but there's no excuse for a doctor in the 21st century to not look at the new evidence, the truckloads of evidence that we have mm-hmm. about plant-based. And you know, the next time, and if your mother runs into that problem, have them call Dr. Montgomery down in Houston, Dr. Baxter Montgomery, the cardiologist down there. Or you can call my doctor I have a doctor up in New York that I go to, Dr. Osfeld. I made a trip up to New York just because I was so fed up with the cardiologist here. And I even went to another cardiologist in the same group, and he just pulled me aside. And he says, my friend, it doesn't matter what I think. He's a senior member of this staff. Do you think I'm ever going to go against him? My career would be over. And that's the sad part, is that there is a mindset that you don't go against other doctors in your practice because that's not what the practice does.
Yes.
And he even told me, he even said as a young guy, he says, dude, I make my money on stents. If I tell you to do something and I'm not doing stents, I'm not making money. Because that's a procedure. I need to be able to do a procedure to get paid. You're coming to my office does not generate any benefit to me financially. The biggest benefit is when I get to go in and put in a stent or two or three or four, because the more those you do, the more I get to make. And I think it's just really sad that as a profession, it has come down to medical practices looking at what they can do that will generate money to increase the net value of the practice and not increase the net outcomes for the patients.
Yep. It becomes kind of a little political, and it's always driven by money, it seems like.
Yes.
So before we say goodbye, I wanted to make sure we cover a couple of things. How can people learn more about you and become, you know, receive some either individual or group coaching for their diabetes? And also, if people are interested in participating in that national pre-diabetes prevention program that you mentioned, also, how can they get involved in that?
Okay. Well, the easiest way, of course, is that they can email me directly at dennis@coursecorrection.us. That's the easiest way. The other way is they can reach out to me through instant messaging, through Instagram. They can find me on Clubhouse. I usually do Meatless Every Day, which is run by a young lady out of Texas who used to be a rancher.
Oh, yes. Rowdy Girl.
Yeah. Rowdy Girl. Yes. I'm on Renee's team now. I've signed up. She sucked me in to being on her team, which is, you know, so by the way, I'm going to be in Texas sooner or later. Plus, my wife has family down in Houston.
Oh, look at that. Yeah.
I have to be down in Texas soon. But easily the easiest way, you can also reach me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Dennis at coursecorrection.us. And I'm trying to think, and of course, my website. And we will be putting together a list of people who are interested in signing up for the pre-diabetes program. The cohorts will be in batches of 14. I can have more people. I just need to segregate them to 14 because it becomes more manageable. Mm-hmm. But it's a one-year program. And wow. We do everything from weekly check-ins, weigh-ins, and everything so that we can help people make the transition to being no longer being pre-diabetic. The reason that I always mention that it's CDC sponsored is because if I have employer groups that want to do it, there are ways in which they can create their own internal wellness program. Okay. And this can then be a write-off for them. So it's no longer an expense. It's treated as a medical write-off because it's it's a wellness program for a particular class of employees.
Wow. So you said earlier when you were talking about reversal that there comes a time, I guess, when certain things can no longer be reversed when in terms of diabetes. Like when I think of my mother's, you know, she's so vulnerable now. She's had two strokes. So now mm-hmm. the goal is just don't have another one and don't have a heart attack. And, you know, she's got the blockage on her leg and neuropathy. A lot of those things can't be reversed.
No.
But what we can do is encourage people to manage it where they are today so that it doesn't get as bad as, say, my mother's situation.
Right. Well, it's also not just that. When I say reverse, I should use that with a little asterisk beside it. Well, I've been fortunate enough to where I have been able to reverse my diabetes and get it off of my diabetes medication. I'm mm-hmm. still considered a diabetic for at least 2 years, so I have to stay drug-free and keep my numbers in line for at least 2 years before I'd be deemed no longer diabetic.
Okay.
But when I say reversal, I mean, I'm talking about reversing the trend. It's instead of full ahead rudder, it's reversed. Our goal now is to turn sail so that we can mm-hmm. We can continue on our path without having to take more medications. And so we want to stabilize, and where possible, if there's enough change where you might be able to reduce the medications that you're on simply by changing your lifestyle. And again, all of this has to be done in coordination with your doctor, which is why I always have clients sign a HIPAA statement with myself, and I will coordinate with their doctors when necessary so that we can all be a part of their team, and because we're all in this together.
Yes.
We really are.
Wonderful. I love it. It's so exciting. Okay. And also, so just real quick, so September 7th is the start of the PCRM's Fight Diabetes with Food 8-week program. You're kicking it off day one on Tuesday, September the 7th. What else do you have coming up? That's your program?
I am trying to put together starting because of the PCRM program. I try not mm-hmm. to have too much overlap because people can only do usually one class a week. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to try to do something starting in mid October, and for that, people can go to my website or they can go to the PCRM website and look me up on there as a Food for Life instructor and mm-hmm. email me from there and say, I want to be aware of your next class. And when I get to get at least 10 people willing to sign up for the class, then I will put together and host another class. And most of my classes are hosted on a Sunday afternoon so that people have their weekday, because I want them to be able to start their week with a recipe.
Yes.
And on a good note of what they can do to better understand diabetes.
Yeah.
Or their health.
Yes. general. Sounds wonderful. Congratulations on all of this. I mean, you took a situation that you were facing and you turned it around, and now you're impacting so many lives. And I don't know anyone else that's doing as much as you're doing in terms of collaborating with our local restaurants and markets and doing hybrid classes because we haven't even returned to doing anything in person. And then you're still doing that along with some, you're taking clients from anywhere, really.
Right. Oh, yeah. One other thing we're trying to do, I am trying to get into communities to do workshops or to talk about the value of going plant-based when you're on a limited or a fixed budget.
Yes.
Because when you go plant-based, you can improve your health, but you can actually improve your bank account's health because I can show people how to shop and live. And I've done this myself. My wife and I literally decided we were going to live on $50 for a week. Mm-hmm. And you can do it. And we actually had food left over. Okay. But you got to know how to shop. And it's right. A learned skill. It's a learned skill. You know,
yeah.
It is a learned skill. But
yeah.
I want to thank you. It's been a joy to see you again.
Thank you.
You know, yeah. And is there anything I can do for your people?
Well, no, I mean, this is huge right here. I mean, diabetes, it's a big condition that, you know, it's so devastating. And I've known people that have suffered greatly with diabetes. And of course, I feel like we never touch it. We don't touch it enough on our podcast. And in general, like you have the day we talk about heart disease and the day we talk about strokes, right? Like as a country or worldwide, we don't spend enough time talking about the conditions that people are living with on a daily basis. Like, it's so advanced. I don't know. It's just devastating. But I love your background and how well equipped you are. And like I said, you're such a motivational speaker. So it was an honor for me to have you come on and motivate our listeners.
It's a pleasure. Yeah. And if you ever need me to come down to Dallas, all you got to do is just let me know. And if I can figure out a way to get to Dallas, I'll be there. Not my favorite city in Texas, but, you know, because I fell in love with Houston. And then I went to Austin. And then I realized how much I really liked Houston over Austin. And, it's all good. Yeah. And Dallas is better than being in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
So. Oh, no. Don't compare us to Tulsa.
Okay. Well, you know.
That's funny. But no, I'll keep in touch. You never know when I'm on Clubhouse as well. And so, by the way, so your Clubhouse handle, is that the same as your IG handle?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I am the same everywhere. That's the beauty. Okay. I'm trying to keep everything the same. And so I am on Clubhouse. You can always ping me. I am on Instagram. Well, Instagram is a little different. It's BenJones07. I'm trying to migrate over to a course correction one, but that migrations are hard. So you can always meet me at BenJones07 on Instagram. And I'm just available. I mean, anybody who needs help, I always tell people, don't worry about costs. Don't worry about anything. Let's just figure out what you need to do and let's figure out a way to make it work.
I like that.
It's about making it work because, having all the talent in the world and making money off of it doesn't really benefit me any if people really aren't getting better. And my goal is to help people get better.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your dedication and I'll be watching you on September 7th.
And it's always a pleasure to see you. My best to your husband.
Thank you.
And I do hope that we can physically get to catch up sometime soon. Okay.
Yeah.
And hug your dog for me.
Oh, thank you. I'm on my way to picking him up again. So I'm going to take him to the park now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Thank you, Dennis. Have a wonderful day.
You too, now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Plant-Based DFW Podcast Show. To hear more fascinating episodes, simply visit plantbaseddfwpodcast.com. And also do me a favor. Leave us a voicemail and tell us what you thought about today's episode. Simply go to podinbox.com/plantbaseddfw. Our goal is to provide quality episodes to help support the community.